start the second session of this morning. Next speaker is Ivan Kiss from the University of Sussex. I think it's the second talk by Ivan.
Okay, thank you. I think there is going to be a bit of repetition, reinforcement from this morning, from Pete's talk, and I also must apologize to some people in the audience who might have seen parts of this talk. So this is not completely new work, but there are some ideas, some extensions towards trying to understand these approximate models that have been derived for approximating processes unfolding on the network. And what I have in mind, we have models such as pairwise models, we have heterogeneous pairwise models, we have effective degree models, we have the type of models that Joel was talking about, and what I'm going to try and do in this talk is to explore possibilities by which we can relate these models to the full exact model, and whether, for example, we can show that these models can be derived directly from the exact equations, and at which point actually we are making the assumptions, the closures, or how can we go about understanding and sort of coming up with some sort of hierarchy between these different models. So this is what I'm trying to do, and I said that some of the bits that are here have been seen by some people, so feel free to check emails or do something else. And I'm also going to hand out a small exercise sheet at some point to everybody in the audience. Don't feel obliged to do it. It's sort of more for fun. Maybe probably you are going to do it very quickly because the room is full of bright people. Okay, so these are my collaborators, my two PhD students, Nick and Timothy, Peter, who is going to talk today. He's going to, again, talk about this sort of models and about more rigorously say something about the convergence between approximate models and the exact counterparts. Thomas House from Warwick, who talked yesterday, and Kieran Sharkey from University of Liverpool, who developed models that were very similar to, not only to Pete's, but sort of also some of in the sort of physics community. So the outline of my talk is as follows. So I'm going to formulate the continuous time Markov chain for the simplest SIS model, because I don't want my state space to become too large, to then it's enough, I don't want 3 to then, not that it makes a big difference. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to illustrate how you can start from the full equations, which are formulated for an arbitrary graph. It doesn't matter if there are loops or no loops, arbitrary graph. And I'm going to show you how, starting from the exact Kolmogorov equation, you can derive the pairwise models. And when I say pairwise models, I have in mind the unclosed version. So when you say the equation, the expected number for the singles depends on pairs, and then the pairs depend on triples, and so on. So I can derive those, and I can show that those are exact before a closure on any graph. And then I'm going to talk about these effective degree models. Can you put up your hand if you are familiar with effective degree models or not? Okay, not many people, so I'm going to probably sort of expand a bit on this idea. And I'm also going to attempt here to formulate an exact effective degree, because so those of you who have studied this model, you do realize that the effective degree model is formulated in papers by Lindquist or papers developed in the physics community by Marceau and Gleason. Actually, the models are already closed. So in that situation, you can ask yourself, you know, what would be the exact unclosed version of the model, and then whether you can also say something about the derivation of that model directly from the exact equations. And then I'm going to say something very briefly and very vaguely, because this is very much unfinished work when I'm trying to relate these different models. So pairwise, heterogeneous pairwise, obviously, I'm not just writing down equations for, let's say, the number, expected number of SI pairs, but I'm also writing an equation for the expected number of SI pairs such that S has M links and I has N links. So this is the type of model that was developed by Imsen and Kiri. Okay. What happened now? Okay. That's fine. Okay, so after I finish the first part, I'm going to go on to talk about lumping using graph automorphisms. And this is just a recipe-based procedure by which you can reduce the number of exact equation to a smaller number by using exploiting the symmetries of the graph. So for example, fully connected graph can be reduced obviously to n equations. If you have a star, can be reduced to 2n. And obviously for many of these things, for these very specific graphs, you can do it in a very heuristic way. But I'm going to tell you that I can give you a recipe. People like recipes, especially UK students like recipes. I'm going to give you a recipe of how to do this, and obviously there are quite a lot of challenges because obviously finding automorphisms of a graph is not an easy task. But what I'm also going to say here is that maybe finding just a few could be enough and could help to reduce a lot, or we could also think about concepts such as maybe approximate lumping. So maybe it's not exact, you are doing some reduction of some sort, it might not be completely exact, but still you might get away with it. And then again, so just talk about open questions towards the end. So hopefully most of you will agree with me if I say that all of these network models, sorry, most of the models, sort of simple ODE, pairwise, simulations and so on, at the basis of all these, you have the exact Kolmogorov equation or the exact master equations written out in full. So here X, it's a very long vector. If it's SIS on a graph with capital N nodes, then this is a vector of 2 to the n states, all possible states. This is the probability of being in those states and the evolution of those times from transition matrix like this, so very familiar. You may have seen this in the previous talk. And obviously, for example, if you take this approach and you assume that the graph is fully connected, then in the limit of large n, then you can get this equation. I'm going to show you how to go from here to here. And then there are all sorts of nice relations that you can come up with. Okay, so how do we formulate the exact model? I'm going to go through this fairly quickly because I hate when people, they reintroduce SIS and SIR over and over again. But I guess it's part of it. So I have... As opposed to other people, I'm going to use tau for the rate of... Sorry?
That's what SIS means, right?
Susceptible, infected, susceptible. Okay, susceptible, infected, susceptible, and I'm going to use tau because, you know, when I come across beta first, it was in terms of OD compartments, and it has slightly different dimension before the dimensionalization. So I have to use tau for the infection and recovery rate. So we have a network of n nodes. It's a symmetric, non-directed graph. So we have a symmetric binary matrix, G equal to G transform, and we don't have any set loops. And then the first challenge is to worry about how I'm going to lay out the state space and how I'm going to write down the equation. So I have two to the n states, and that's obviously because every node can be in S or I. So in total, if you enumerate them all, you have 2 to the n. So we come up with this kind of notation where we have curly S0. This is the state when everybody is S, that's the absorbing state, and then we use curly SK to denote the n choose k states where you have k infectious nodes in the graph, and obviously they can be distributed in these many different ways, and then finally curly SM when everybody is infected. So these, obviously, within each set SK, you have all the enumerations, so SK1, SK2, and so on, and obviously each of these is just a string of n characters, either S or I. Yeah? So this is the model. And this is a very simple example. So if I have a graph with 3 nodes, then you have 2 to the 3 elements in the state space, and these are all the possible listing, SSS, SSI, SIS, and so on. So everybody probably is familiar with this kind of language. Okay, so now we have to worry about the transitions. Obviously we have infection or we have recovery. Infection simply means that you are identifying 2 such strings that are going to be sort of distinct at 1 single position. So there must be a position if you have an infection where, let's say in here, I'm talking about position L, at position L before in SJK, so the state with K infectious nodes, node L was susceptible and now he becomes infected. And obviously you need to put some conditions, you have to make sure that there are I's linking to this S node, otherwise this transition will not be possible. And similarly, when we have recovery, then this is independent of the neighbors, each node recovers independently. So we can have transitions like this, SSI going to SII, provided that this I is linked to the S, and recovery an III in a triangle, in a graph with 3 nodes going to SII. Okay, so these are the transitions. So the evolution in the state space can be described by a continuous time Markov process. And then now what I do, I assign probabilities to being in the various states, and these are denoted like this. So x, k, j, t means that you are in a state which has k infectious nodes, and this is the jth component in the n choose k listings of the different rings. So obviously this, as I said, this becomes a vector, and then this is very easy, intuitive, everybody is more or less aware of how these things are done. So here you have infection. You go from k minus 1 to k infection. So this AK matrix is very important because this is the infection. This stores all the information about the graph. This tells me precisely where the edges in the graphs are. So it's going to contain all the information about the infection. So let me just once again reiterate that these are vectors and these are matrices. Here is the recovery, and then B follows from the rest because we have a closed system. So if I have an out transition from a class, then I have to have an in transition somewhere else, so that follows easily. So now, what I can do, I can take all these vectors and put them, all these row vectors, and put them all next under, you know, under each other, and then I have 2 to the n, and I build this nice block parallel structure, and then this is my system. And by the way, you can do this if you want to compute this, I mean, if you use some kind of lexicographical ordering, then you can list in a clever way all these strings, and then you can write some nice computer code where you can generate this matrix on the fly, and obviously you cannot do it for very large graphs, as you said, so 10, probably 15 is the maximum. But the point is that you can play around and you can generate this huge system for whatever graph you like. So again, the same example, if I have a simple graph with 3 nodes, then these are the possible states, so these are probabilities. And then this is how the structure is going to look. And here it's written down more concretely. So basically you have this system of equations. These are the probabilities. This is the transmission matrix. And I just give you an example. So for example, if I look at the equation of this, so what's the probability of being in state ISI on a fully connected triangle? And what you can see, you can come into this state via an infection. So this node infects this one. Or you can come via infection where this node infects this one. Or you can come via recovery from this state, and then you can leave this state via 2 recoveries which are independent, and here you have two pressure. You have two pressure from 2 infectious nodes on this guy. So, you know, hopefully via these small examples I managed to sort of keep people on track. Okay. So obviously solving these two to the linear differential equations is not feasible, but obviously we do not want to always do that, but maybe sometimes we are just happy we get information like this. What is the expected number of infectious individuals at time t? And this very simply can be written as an average from the exact state. Yeah, I'm just averaging over all possible combinations. So these are all the states with k infectious neighbors. I take all the probabilities together, multiply them by k, and average over all k, and that will give me exactly that. Now, for the S again, it's very simple, but you know, what about if I want to write down the expected number of SI? Because I told you that what I want to do is that I want to start from this very large system, and I want to say something about these pairwise equations. Well, if I want to write this down, then okay, I can do it first like this. This is completely useless, because here I just use a notation, I say that this means the number of SI pairs in this state. But that's not very helpful, yeah? Because I would like to be able to compute somehow this quantity from the matrices A, B, and C, from the transition matrix. And it turns out that, for example, SI is quite easy to do. It's just going to be the sum of the jth row in this AK plus 1 matrix. And I'm going to show you why that is. And the trick around being able to show this is that you have to make lots of such observation, how you can use the information in the AK matrices, in the CK matrices, and use this in a clever way to be able to come up with these things. So anyway, what I'm saying is, theorem one, is that the expected value of SI, SI, II, and so on, satisfy the pairwise equation, unclosed. And obviously, you're going to have also trouble when you want to count quantities like this, what is the expected number of SSI triples, yeah? Maybe if you try, you're going to realize that these are not easy to compute out of the full system, yeah? Okay, so let me just tell you briefly some of the tricks and some of the observations that you can make. So the first observation is that the number, okay, let me just go back a bit because maybe it's not very clear what's happening. So what's happening now is, for example, if I want to derive this equation, yeah, for the SI, I need the evolution equation for SI, then I differentiate this SI, I go with the differentiation inside the summation, and this becomes the derivative of this guy, and at this point I need to go back to the Kolmogorov equation and replace all that complicated matrix structure here, and all the complicated matrix structure I need to reduce it to the right hand side of this equation. So I should be able to count all these quantities in terms of the nice matrices, yeah? And hopefully this makes sense. So in order to do that, you are going to have to do tricks like this. For example, the number of SI edges in a certain state, and I'll tell you here, for example, if you have SSI state. Now if you go and you check all the possible ways in which this state transits to the one more infection state, so you go from one infection to two infection, and if you add up all the taus in this row, then this is going to be exactly the number of SI pairs. So that is one very important observation. The same holds for the recovery. So for example now, if I take the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th, so if I take this state, then recovery can happen in two ways. And if I go into the CK matrix and I sum the row, again, I get what I want. So there are lots of little tricks like this, and I must say that my second PhD student come up with a sort of more elegant way of actually doing this. But, you know, it's good to have different ways of doing the same stuff. Anyway, just a few more ideas about how the proof is going to work. This is going to be also an important assumption, obviously, where infection is possible, then you also have recovery. That's going to be also a very important observation and do the proof. And the number of II pairs, if you want to count the number of II pairs, again, can be obtained from the infection matrix. Because counting the II pairs is equivalent to making each I, to disinfect each I and make it an S again, and go back to the previous state and count the number of SIs. And that will be the number of IIs in the next generation of infection, yeah? Just, you can try that on a small graph. If you want to count the number of IIs, take in turn each I, make it susceptible, count up the SIs, and that will be the number of IIs in the next sort of infection generation. Okay, so this is also very important. And finally, this is also very nice. You can count the number of triples of the type ISI. So these are, you have a susceptible node in the middle, like this. And you're interested in finding the number of triples, so ISI. And again, this can be done because you know what is the infection pressure on the S. The infection pressure on the S, they give the total number, the total number of infectious neighbors, and then the number of ISI is obviously simply n times n minus 1. Yeah? And then you have to be careful just to scale it out all over the place. So based on this observation, you can prove that the pairwise equation in an unclosed version is exact. Any questions? Because I didn't put anything for the tuple. You, strictly speaking, I have not closed the tuple, so
okay,
technically speaking, okay, this is not very useful because you cannot do anything with it, yeah? But we were just very happy that we were able to show, because pairwise model, I mean, to our knowledge, it was pretty much derived more on a kind of heuristic and kind of bookkeeping way. Sorry?
You read it also?
You read it also? Well done. Congratulations. Okay, I'm not aware of the paper. Maybe we can share after.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
All this year.
Okay. Okay, so now, recently in this paper, I mean, personally, I've seen this model first time in link with Ma and Van Driesche and I don't know how to read this. Okay, I'll leave that to you. In the Journal of Mathematical Biology, Effective Degree Network Disease Models. So then, so this is how the model looks. And maybe I'm going to spend just a bit of time to try and explain to those who are not familiar with this formulation. So the idea here is that you want to take a population level view and count up nodes in the following way. So you're interested in storing the information not just about the status of the node. So this SSI, this basically means that you have a susceptible node, this is kind of the central node, and you have this many I links, it has this many I links, and it has this many small S links. So this means the number of such susceptible nodes who have S susceptible neighbors and I infectious neighbors. And do the same for the I means exactly the same. And then in the network setting, you can start worrying about how can I write down an evolution for this, again, in a kind of heuristic way. And some of these terms are very simple. So for example, this minus beta I SSI, it just means that the central node can be infected by its neighbors. I have a susceptible node, it has I infectious neighbors, there is a beta I infection pressure on it. You can have the recovery of an infectious node with the same neighborhood configuration recovers. We have recovery of neighbors. So I have a susceptible node who has one less susceptible neighbor and one more infectious. You know, the infectious neighbors recover, and then you go into this category. But let me focus on the most important term. So what you have here is the situation where you want to work out the infection from outside. Basically what happens, you have a susceptible node, actually the situation is here. So you have a susceptible central node, and then these are the susceptible neighbors of the central node. Let's call them susceptible neighbors. And you are interested in working out that these themselves can become infected from outside. So not in the neighborhood, but you have an infectious node somewhere here infecting the neighbors of the central node. And obviously this is a bit like you are expanding. You start with the level of pairs, and then you have doubles, and then triples, and then quadruples. Yeah? And obviously you can either printer doesn't like me. So you can either write down sort of a theoretical expression for that, and you can start looking for a closure. So what we have here is actually a closure. And the way how to think about this is as follows. So if you just look at what's happening here, so first of all I must say that these S and I's, so these indices, leave, they can be either zero or they can be the maximal degree in the network. In this situation, this is called capital F. So S and I lives in 0 n. So obviously here, you have a bit of a problem because if n is very large, the number of equations grows. So it's not like in Joel's model where it didn't seem to depend on this kind of thing, and the number of equations remain nicely bounded. So let us look at this again very quickly. So what you see here, you have a susceptible node, and you are multiplying him by the number of susceptible and the infectious neighbors. And to me, if you do this summation over all the possible combinations, that's nothing else than what we call an SSI triple. This is the count of all the SSI triples in the graph. And basically, this is taken as a proxy for infection from outside. And what we have here, the next bit, because I'm going to write it in a different way, so this S plus 1, I minus 1, this just tells me that all of these neighbors could be potentially infected. And I like to think of this because what's here at the bottom is actually the number of SS pairs. This summation of J, SGL is the number of SS pairs. So what I'm doing is I take the kind of global pressure, infection pressure from outside, and I'm redistributing it proportionally. So what's the probability that an SS pair will belong to a node with this configuration? So this is closed in a very heuristic way. I don't know if you understood my explanation, I hope you did. If not, then obviously you can think of it in your own time. So that's the idea. So they have written down these models and they work really well. You can do it for SIR as well. So the agreement is fantastic between the time evolution and what you get from this equation by implementing them in MATLAB or in some other software. Obviously, the number of equations is large and you can even get some analytical traction on threshold and stuff like that. Now, as I said, this is already closed, it's not exact, and okay, what we have managed to do, I guess it's not a very, very difficult task to do, is you can come up with an exact version of this. And we have used this notation to say that if we have a node S with this configuration, then I'm going to go to a neighbor of the central node, and I'm going to count up all the infection pressure properly from outside onto this neighbor. So here actually you have a quadruple because you have the whole configuration. You have the S who have S and I, and then I go to one of its S neighbors. This is this guy, and then I count up how many infections are coming into this. And I do that for all the nodes, yeah?
Okay.
So capital Si is the number of the fractions in that situation.
S-I. Capital S, Si, yes.
Is the fraction.
No, it's integer at this point. We have not known that.
Oh, the number.
The number.
So it's the number. Yeah. No, because of the beginning.
Is the number, yeah. There is no one dimensionalization, so it's the rough version of it. Okay, so we wanted to put it in this form because we want to relate it to the Kolmogorov equation, so I want to come up with the exact version of it. And also, there are lots of interesting things that you can do. So for example, if you take this model and you sum up and you want to recreate the number of SS, the number of SIs, then you can do this via summation. It's very easy to count up SS pairs from this and SI pairs. And if you do this very simple algebraic manipulations, you are going to be able to recover the pairwise model. And what is this telling us? Well, obviously it's a sort of higher level, there is more heterogeneity included in it, so maybe it is a better model, maybe it's going to agree better with the simulation, and this is the kind of question that we want to answer. Okay, so let's see how do we go about. I have a kind of partial proof to show that what we have written down is exact. So the problem is caused by such events. So I have a susceptible node with infectious neighbors and with susceptible guys, and this is what my term means. It means that I'm looking for outside infection of my susceptible neighbors, and obviously you can also lose susceptible neighbors again by outside infection. Now there's a little bit of a trick about what these brackets mean. And the only trick comes in that in the case of such combinations, ISI, so IS and then I, lowercase SI, such combination include linking back to the central node. Because if you have you can go IS and then not necessarily a different I from outside, but you can link back to yourself. So you have to count for those as well. Okay, so in order to do this proof, we are going to kind of make use of a nice generalization that Thomas Haus and his co-authors have done a bulletin of mathematical biology, and we conjecture that this following system is exact. So because we were able to show from the Kolmogorov that is true for, the level of singles and doubles, yes, then we are going to conjecture without proof that if you go with the pairwise one level higher, then this is also going to hold. So we take this approach, and obviously here I'm going to be in a bit of a muddle, because if you have four guys like that, you can have them on a line. You have to count for all situations. So you can have four like this, or you can have four like this, yeah? And by this you exhaust all the possibilities. And this is what these arrows mean. That you have four nodes on a line, and then you have three, a star. You have effectively a star, yeah? So now we conjecture that this is exact. And then we make another very simplifying assumption that we want to show that this is exact on a cycle graph. And why do we do that? Well, we do that because on a cycle graph, it's very easy to count out this effective degree business. If you have a cycle graph, then you only have things like S20, S11, S02, and the same for the I. 20, 11, and 02. And this kind of count is equivalent to the count of the triples. So I say SSSS over 2 is the same as S20. So what I'm going to do now, I looked at the evolution equation, which I conjecture that is exact, and then I'm going to dress it into the effective degree language, which comes from my kind of writing down the equation, and I can show very easily that the two approaches are exactly the same. Okay, I mean, it's not ideal. We would have liked to do a more comprehensive proof of this, but obviously it's not easy. So we have gone one step further, but I'm not going to tell you about that. I can tell you, you can make the effective degree even more complicated by not just saying how many susceptibles and how many infectives you have, but you can also say what is the different degree of your neighbors. Yeah? And I need to do that because if I want to come up with a model hierarchy, then for example from the effective degree I cannot make heterogeneous pairwise, because I don't have enough information. And if I make extended effective degree, then I can do this kind of derivation, that from this I can derive exact effective degree, I can derive heterogeneous pairwise, and from all this I can derive pairwise, and here you have the sort of count of equations where R is roughly the maximal degree. So obviously you are losing tractability when you are doing sort of this more detailed model, but what we are hoping that we are going to be able to do some kind of hierarchical structure into this model. How much time do I have? 10-15
minutes.
10-15 minutes only, wow. Okay, so this is just a bit of a taste. This is a project that we are working on with Kiran Sharkey. And we have managed to complete the proof to show that if you have an SIR model and you use Kiran Sharkey's approach and you use the Kerfoot closure, then this is going to be exact, and this is for any graph with no loops of any dimensions, but finite. It can be a finite graph, 5 nodes, 10 nodes, whatever. Yeah, and hopefully this is going to come out, hopefully this year. So the idea of the proof is like this. So you start with this kind of formulation, which is very similar to Pitts and to the kind of classic physicist formulation. So this is just the probability that node i is in state s, and this is the probability that node I is in S and its neighbor J is in state I. And if you are going to provide this kind of Kerfoot closure, this is for probabilities here now, not for population level counts. And we can show that that system that we are getting from this closure is going to be exact for any graph that has no loops of 3 or 4 or higher. Okay, so lumping. And maybe to make use of this, can I ask somebody to hand this out, this exercise, quickly? Maybe just, let's divide any more files because then it transmits faster. So that is kind of the end of the first part. So basically this was an attempt to show how the various approximate models can be linked to the original Kolmogorov equation. Now with the lumping, I'm not going to do lots of theoretical stuff about it, but I'm going to just explain very intuitively. So what I mean by lumping: if you have a fully connected graph, so you have 3 nodes fully connected, and you write out equations like this, you can notice very easily that you can make the following simplification. You can define new variables in terms of additive combinations of the old ones. So I can say that I want to group all these guys together. And I want to group them together because they are topologically equivalent, because if you have a fully connected graph, it doesn't matter where the point infection neighbor individual lies. And the same you can do this, and the same you can do that. And then instead of 8 equations, you have only 4 equations. And then you can still recover the same information as before. You can work out the average I, average S, and more than that. So this is precisely exact. This is not an approximation. This is exact lumping. Now, what I want to show you in this, that you can provide a recipe for how to do this, because for the fully connected graph, we know. But there are some other graphs which have a lot of structure, and it might not be so straightforward. And maybe I'm going to skip this definition of lumping, and I'm going to show something like this. So in the lumping, what's important, I'm going to try to explain this very heuristically, is that you start with the original state space, and you come up with these additive combinations with these lumping classes. So let's say I have n, 2 to the n elements in the state space, and maybe I can kind of come up with these many lumping classes. So these are subsets. These are subsets of the elements from the state space, and you just add these together, and this will be the new variable. And the important point here is that if you take the rate at which each element here, so if I take an element, let's say Li, which belongs to here, then the way in which he can transit to each of the elements in L2, very bad now, I'm getting lost in. Let's say that these are R1, R2, Rn. These are the elements. All of these are in L2. Then what I want to say is that if you sum all these rates, then these are going to be the same no matter which element you pick from L1. So the rate at which one element from here transits to all the possible elements in here is the same no matter which element you choose. Because then you can make some nice algebraic manipulation, you can factorize things out nicely. So here I'm just saying that the way in which SSI goes to all possible elements in the 2 infections is the same. It's always 2 times. So therefore I can group these together. Yeah? Okay, so this is the very intuitive explanation. And now what is the key to perform lumping? Well, the key to perform lumping, sort of in a more rigorous mathematical way, is to identify the automorphisms of the graph. The automorphism of the graph is just the bijection between the vertices of the graph. So I take 1, 2, 3, n, and I map it, you know, like a permutation. And if this is an automorphism, then obviously this will preserve the edges in the sense that if x and y, two nodes, are in the edge class, so it's an edge in the original graph, then their image phi x phi I are going to be still an edge in the same graph. And now what you can do, if you identify all these automorphisms, you can look, you can apply the elements of the automorphism group and work out the trajectory of the elements in the state space. So you apply the automorphism for the strings of characters, and whatever this chucks out can be grouped together. And your exercise now, you can look at your exercise, that if, so this was very simple for this guy, we didn't need automorphisms, yeah? And then we could reduce from 2 to the 3, reduce this to 4. Now, to how many elements can I reduce this graph, and to how many elements can I reduce this? And I suggested on the paper that for these graphs, we know the automorphisms. These are the rotations, and they are the reflections. So the rotations, you rotate, and the reflection is that you fix this one, and then you exchange this. And then you fix this one, and you exchange this, yeah? So would you please have a go, 5 minutes, and tell me how many lumping classes I have here. So you have 2 to the 4 and 2 to the 5. I hope that you're going to be cooperative with
okay.
Yeah, it's okay, yeah. You can do it unofficially. But let me tell you what, if I give you a cycle graph of N6, then I don't think that you can do it so easily heuristically, or 7 or 8 or 9. And more than that, okay, so do you want to, shall I just carry on? Are you going to play ball or no? No. Okay, if you don't want to play ball, then I'm going to tell you that actually there is a formula that for prime numbers, I can tell you that for prime numbers, if you have a prime number with the number of nodes n is prime, and on the cycle graph, then the number of lumping classes is this. 2 to the p minus 1 minus 1 over p plus 2 to the p minus 1 over 2 and plus 1. This was worked out by a Hungarian graph specialist. If you're a cycle graph, you can lump it to this many prime number, yeah? Cycle graph. I'm really disappointed that you don't want to play ball. More for Juan, because he wasted his time, you know, photocopying all these things. Anyway, here is the answer. So for 4, if I list all the rotations and all the reflections, so this is what I mean. You take lumping class 1, you take the first element and you put it through all the mappings, and obviously you end up with this. Now the interesting thing here is that obviously for the single one, it doesn't matter where you have the single on the cycle, yeah? However, when you go to the 2, you're going to have a difference, because if you map the SSIIs through the automorphisms, you will not recover all the states with 2 infections. They're only recovered here those where you have 2 I close to each other. You can take these 2 eyes all over the graph, and then obviously when you have a distance between them, this is going to be a different lumping class. So you end up with 2 to the 4 reduced to 6 equations. So this reduces to 6 equations, 2 to the 4, and this reduces to 8, the 2 to the 5. Okay, so anyway, this cycle graph came about because the referee said to us, okay, you have this nice recipe, but then for the fully connected graph and for the star graph, you can do it heuristically, so what do you need the recipe? So then we came up with the cycle graph and said, look, if you have a cycle graph and you have lots of nodes, then you know, you're not going to know how many. But if you have the automorphism, then you can, and then he was happy. And we were happy as well. Okay, so here, just to reiterate that if the graph is highly structured, then obviously for the fully connected graph, everybody knows you can reduce it to n equations, because you can work out easily what is the infection rate. It's just the number of, what is the infection rate? It's here, so k minus 1, so si, basically s times I, because everybody else. And here I just plotted the exact and mean field, and they are very close to each other because they're on a fully connected graph. Now for the star graph, again, as Pete pointed out, it's enough to have 2 to the n, because the really important stuff is whether the central node is infected or not, and then how many s and i's we have on the leads. And all this can be counted up in 2n. So if you have a star graph, the only important thing is to know whether this guy, the central node, is he s or i, and then you just want to know how many s's and i's you have on the leads. It don't matter where they are, and then you can reduce it to this many equations, and then this is going to be exact, not approximation. Yeah? And then we have done some more models, because people like clumps and households, metapopulations, then we come up with some other models that could potentially, you know, make sense in this kind of context. And here we have in mind households, for example, they're very simplistic. You have 2 people in a household, and then this is fully connected, yeah? So this is somehow almost similar to the star graph in the sense that now the only important thing to know is to know the composition of, now these are the leads, the households are the leads. And that they can be in 4 states, either SS, SI, IS, or II. You just need to, enumerate if you choose with replacement, you know, to find all the possible types. And for this situation, the number of equations can be reduced to this, is still very large. So for the complete graph, we can reduce n plus 1, and for the star, we can reduce to 2n, and this is the automorphism group. And as I said, obviously there are difficulties because automorphism is not easy to find, but maybe even some kind of numerical procedure that looks for automorphisms and could be useful, because you don't need to apply, again, all the automorphisms to the state space in order to come up with this lumping thing. So summary, identify the link between exact pairwise and exact effective tree and the Kolmogorov equation. I think this, looking at model hierarchy, would be quite interesting, at least for me, so to understand which are maybe the better performing ones, or which can be derived from which one, and how they, a bit like what Joel was saying, like a nice diagram of illustrating this. I think approximate lumping could be something that could be sort of explored in the future. And obviously, if you are going to be able to come up with some hierarchy, then obviously we can also talk about trade-offs, benefits, about can you do analytical stuff, are there too many equations, and so on. So I think I'm going to stop here. Thanks for your attention.
I just want to make a remark that this problem of the cycle graph and the lumping, I think it's equivalent to the combinatorial problem of the necklace, where you have different colors and you're given a length of a necklace, you ask how many different, essentially different of modulo rotation necklaces you can make. And it's solved.
To reduce the state space, you mean?
Yeah, so it's arbitrary number of colors. There is some kind of inversion in combinatorics which gives you the answer. I forgot the name.
Okay. Not aware of it, but we have all
that. But is it solved in the way?
Yeah, I think I forgot. Either there is an expression or there is an equation that determines the number.
That would be interesting to have.
I think it is actually maybe an expression, but I forgot. But I can do it.
More questions?